So there is no doubt in my mind that it's been forever since Washington's had a game of this magnitude in September, October. We've talked about it all week long. And the question, of course, is, you know, will they be up for it? You know, I think that there's a lot of angst among fans, those that have really immersed themselves in this season, and those that are just starting to trickle back in because the team appears to be good. And really, it makes a big difference when a team is, you know, looking on the uptick in terms of potential playoffs, etc., but has a superstar to go along with it. And that's what they have right now in Jaden Daniels. He has certainly played that way. And I've sensed all week, and we've taken calls, and you know, there's been a lot of interaction on social media. I do kind of sense that there's a lot of people expecting the other shoe to drop on Sunday. I don't feel that way at all. But I totally understand those that do feel that way. You know, Quinn was asked about it the other day, and he said, I haven't even thought of it that way. Well, why would he? This is his first year here. But there's something different, you know. There's more than just something different. There's a lot different about what they're going into Sunday. You know, this isn't an organization that might, you know, have won a couple of games in a row and have people excited, but the owner is going to get involved with the quarterback, and the owner is going to somehow meddle with the coach. He's gone. You know it still seems at times like it wasn't that long ago, and it wasn't, but he's gone. You have a traditional structure in your organization. You got an organization that is functional. You got an owner that steers clear. He hired a general manager. They hired a coach. There is a front office that picks the players. There's a coaching staff that coaches the players. And the most important thing that they've done after Josh Harris hiring Adam Peters and Adam Peters and Josh Harris hiring Dan Quinn is it appears they got it right on the most important football move, the very first significant football move they made, which was drafting Jaden Daniels at number two. And look, there were choices there. It wasn't so obvious. I think it became obvious before the draft and the weeks leading up to the draft. It started to become more obvious, but there were a lot of Drake May people out there. There were a lot of you that said, no, don't take the quarterback. Trade back. Get more picks. Build up your offensive line. Build up your defense. And then go get the quarterback. And look, that is not like an unreasonable view. I've never felt that way as it relates to this particular sport, because in 2024, you pretty much have to have the quarterback. Yes, there are examples, and San Francisco might be one of those examples, but we don't have Kyle Shanahan and that runs, you know, that zone run scheme and what Shanahan's been able to do in San Francisco, what his father was able to do in every place he was in. It's just unique to be able to win with Jimmy Garoppolo, to be able to win with Brock Purdy, who I think is better than Jimmy Garoppolo, and probably, you know, a definite top half of the league quarterback. I don't consider Purdy to be elite. I don't consider Purdy to be top 10. Some do, but he's definitely a top half of the league quarterback. But most need the quarterback. The Chiefs weren't the Chiefs without Patrick Mahomes. They had, you know, they had Alex Smith and Andy Reid together, and they really couldn't do anything once they got to the postseason. The Ravens have Lamar Jackson. The Bengals have Joe Burrow. The Packers had Aaron Rodgers. The Cowboys, yes, they have Dak Prescott, but they don't do anything in the playoffs. Anyway, you got to have the quarterback. They appear to have gotten that right. And as long as he stays healthy, I don't feel the angst heading into Baltimore, heading into any place this year, home or away, feeling like the other shoe's going to drop. It just has not felt that way to me. I don't think these players, I don't think these coaches have any sense of what some of us and some of you guys are feeling. I think they think they're good. I think even before this season started, there were people out there that expected a lot more than maybe a lot of us expected. There is no doubt that Jaden Daniels has exceeded their expectations, but they expected him to be good. They expected their offensive line to be a lot better than the critics thought. They actually expected their skill position players, especially at running back, to be much better than some of the pundits thought they would be. I guarantee you that Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury thought they had a shot to be pretty decent offensively this year. I also think they thought they had a chance to be much better defensively than they've been so far. And to me, ultimately, that is a big part of Sunday's game. How well the defense plays in a specific area of the field. I can't wait for Sunday. Cannot wait for Sunday at 1 o'clock. The build-up to see Washington relevant right now, again, for the first time in a long time, is really nice. It's something to, you know, it's exciting when everybody's talking about your team in a positive way versus the other way, which was the way it was discussed for so long. There's no guarantee that it's going to last here early in the quarterback's career, early in this first season of having all of these guys together. But I don't think it's going to crash and burn this year. They're just too good and too good at the most important position on the field for it to fall apart. I don't want to think about losing Sunday. And I've already said that those that go into this thinking, hey, it's okay. We've, you know, built up 4 wins. We've got, you know, a good spot, you know, situated after 6 games, win or lose. This is an icing on the cake game. No, it's not. It's a go in and take over M&T Bank with an offense and dominate Baltimore and score 35+ and come home 5-1. That's the opportunity. And I guarantee you that's what they're thinking they can do. Now, they're up against a very good team and an exceptional quarterback and offense right now in Baltimore's offense. But if they were to lose, it's certainly not the end of the season. It's certainly not going to, you know, significantly lessen the talk about Washington's prospects in the NFC. But I like their chances. I really do. So this game, to me, is a measuring stick game, you know, but I think that's the way we think of things. Fans do, you know, media do. The coaches, I mean, my God, it's cliche, but it's so true the way they are, you know, sort of built, the way that they are constructed, you know, especially the good ones. And I think Dan Quinn is proving here early on that he was the right choice because of the experience. And the league, you know, those that have been in it for so long, they understand. You know, you're essentially only as good as your last game, and every game is its own entity. Every game takes on a completely different personality. You know, yes, there are things that become consistent with teams as you get further into the season, and you can see, oh, this team's really good on offense, or this team's really good on defense, or this is just a really good team, or this is just a really bad team. But even then, you have to be careful week to week, and really the goal is just to stack them. You know, stack wins. You know, get each week, just whatever needs to be done to win that game is the way they think, and it's the right way for them to think. It's not, you know, oh my God, you know, we played well or we won this game and this really puts us measurement wise near the top. You know, that's not how they think, because next week's game against Carolina will be just as big. In fact, in some ways, if you want to view it as, you know, a tiebreaker situation, it's a conference game. It's not a division game, but it's a conference game. So I get what Quinn says, and I think each week NFL coaches, you listen to coaches and quarterbacks in particular when they do their press conferences weekly, these guys that have been around the league forever, they don't talk in terms of, nah, this one we're going to kind of see where we measure up. They may feel that way, but it's just so week to week, and the good ones recognize that, and they're just trying to stack good performances and stack wins, you know, and they're doing whatever they can this week to win this game. And every week it's different. For me, I think this is a measuring stick game. I actually think in some ways the Cincinnati game was a bit of a measuring stick game, but I don't think I thought of it in that context because they were 1-1. They had lost to the Buccaneers. They had, you know, beaten the Giants on a walk-off field goal, but it's kind of an ugly game in that I think we all realize that game could have easily gone the other way had the Giants had a kicker and had Malik Nabers held on to a 4th-and-4 that was right in his hands on the sideline. But they won the game and, by the way, did not punt in the game, which was really encouraging. And we were starting to see some signs, even from the opener, that offensively they had a chance to be decent. You know, when you kick 7 field goals, you're not super excited, but when you win the game and you didn't punt, and on 7 drives you move the football, you realize there's something there. And then all of a sudden, you had this opportunity in Cincinnati. The expectations for win weren't necessarily there, I don't think, from the masses, but they went in there and they just absolutely put on a show. And I didn't think of it as a measuring stick game in the moment, but it was clearly a game in which you recognized, wow, these dudes are not tied to any sort of past. They're not tied to any sort of, you know, PTSD feelings from the past. They're not expecting the worst to happen. They went in on a Monday night with the entire nation watching with true kind of swag. And they beat the Bengals, who I don't care that their record's 1-4. They're a decent team. We know that. I mean, they are certainly decent offensively. I mean, they lost to the Chiefs by a point, an undefeated team. They lost to the Ravens in a game they actually probably should have won by 3 in overtime. And Washington went in and not only beat them, they scored 38 points. And they announced themselves as a team with the rookie quarterback of the 6 taken in the top whatever of the draft that was the guy, at least here early, and maybe the guy moving forward, and an offense with Cliff Kingsbury that looked borderline unstoppable. But then, you know, you beat the Cardinals, not a great team, but you hang 42 on them, and then you beat down the Browns by 21, and now all of a sudden you're, you know, right there as one of the top offenses in the league. You got a quarterback playing at an MVP level, but you really haven't faced a big-time test in terms of the opponent since the opener, and the opener is just kind of weird anyway. So to me, going to Baltimore with the Ravens on a 3-game win streak, with the Ravens being, as they have been, a legitimate Super Bowl contender. I actually think they're a much different team than they were last year at this point. They are certainly different defensively. Last year, they were awesome defensively. Last year, the Ravens, at the end of that year, I just thought we were watching, in the moment, one of the best overall teams we had seen in years. And I loved them going into the postseason to win the Super Bowl. I had them, you know, for the limit against the Chiefs. Didn't work out. This year, they look, again, incredibly dynamic offensively. They look a little bit different defensively. But the magnitude of this game, the players, I think it's a measuring stick game from this standpoint. Do they go in there with the same kind of fearlessness and competitiveness and toughness that they went into Cincinnati with? This is a bigger spot. This is more eyes, more attention than they've had on any of their games. People now believe Washington might be a contender. And do they go in there and do they play at the level they've played at the last 3 games in particular? You know, I'm not talking as much about defensively. I'm talking about, does that offense go in there and take the Ravens by storm? Do they go in there and put up another, you know, 6 scores on 9 drives? You know, and are they sitting there with another point total in the 30s? Win or lose? I want them to win, obviously. But I think from that standpoint, the offense for me, to see them go in and do what they did against Cleveland, Cardinals, Cincinnati, to a lesser extent the Giants, but in that environment Sunday, which will be hostile, although I really think, Denton, there are going to be a lot of Washington fans in that crowd. Do you think that will be the case?
I know that because I know a lot of my friends that are fans of the team.
A lot of my friends are going.
You know, it's a short enough games to where if we saw a lot of Washington fans in Arizona, it only makes sense that there's going to be maybe not like a 50-50 split, but you'll see a significant amount of burgundy and gold this weekend.
I agree with that. Now, you know, the aftermarket prices are outrageous for this game. Like, you can't get into a decent lower level seat for less than, you know, $1,000. And if it's, you know, if you're in the corners, you know, in the lower level, maybe $800. Forget suite level. They're basically in the thousands right now. The aftermarket, StubHub, all those, SeatGeek, all those, go check out the prices for this game. It's unbelievable. There is massive demand for this one. And because of that, yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of Washington. But it's still a road game, an intense environment, a team with pedigree, a team that many others have looked up to organizationally and otherwise, a team that, by the way, needs to win the game. You know, the Ravens started off by losing two games to the Chiefs and to the Raiders at home. They've bounced back, beating the Cowboys, Bills, and Bengals. And, you know, if they're going to be what they were last year, meaning going into the postseason with home field advantage, these are the kinds of games they got to win at home. They're a 7-point favorite, 6.5, 7-point favorite. Yeah. For me, the measure Sunday is, does Jaden Daniels, Cliff Kingsbury, Terry McLaurin, Brian Robinson Jr., Austin Ekeler, that offensive line, those tight ends, do they go in there and do they continue what they've given us for the last 3 weeks? Great offense, unstoppable offense, incredible quarterback play, and do they hang another 28-plus on somebody, another 30-plus on somebody? Because if they do that, you know, I don't want to say win or lose, but there would be the feeling that, wow, I mean, we go in there and hang 30 on that team. We can do it against anybody. Every single game on the schedule is winnable the rest of the way. And if you go in there and you also get a defensive step-up performance, I'm not expecting that. I'll be pleasantly surprised if the defense can shut down Baltimore. If you get that, now all of a sudden, strike up the bandwagon, TK. It's 91 all over. You know, if you go back to the 91 season, okay, let me get crazy here just for a moment, all right? You know, you did not know early in that 91 season that it was going to be what it turned out to be. And I say that because, first of all, before that season started, you know, Joe Gibbs was downplaying everything. There was that famous exchange with Steve Buckhantz and Joe Gibbs before the season began. Joe said, you know, everybody's picking you. And Joe said, you know, nobody's picking us. Joe always dialed it back. Joe undersold and overpromised. I mean, that was when the organization truly was about delivering substance and never telling you it's coming. That's what made that runs so great. But Buck famously said that Playboy magazine had picked the Skins to win the Super Bowl, and Gibbs, you know, lost it and said, Playboy, well, that's all you need to know. Playboy picking football. But, you know, they had a game in week six, interestingly, on the road against the Chicago Bears. Now, they were 5-0, and their defense had shut out three opponents. But the opponents were the Lions, the Cardinals, and the Eagles, who were playing with backup quarterbacks, plural. It was like Pat Ryan and Jim McMahon, you know, on Monday Night Football. And they had beaten the Cowboys in a close game, and they had beaten the Bengals in a close game. But they were 5-0, but I don't think anybody sensed that this was, you know, a team that was absolutely destined to win the Super Bowl. But they went to Chicago in week six, and the Bears were 4-1, and Washington was 5-0. This was a huge early season game. You know, the NFC during the 80s, 49ers, Redskins, Bears, Giants, you know, Cowboys to a lesser extent. The games that those teams had with each other, you know, obviously in the division in the NFC East, which was stacked, with the Skins and the Giants in particular. The Cowboys and the Eagles were decent too. But you had the 49ers and the Bears, you know, during their runs. And so it seemed like Washington and Chicago, Washington and San Francisco played a lot, whether it was in the postseason where they played each other, you know, multiple times, or even in the regular season. And this was the measuring stick game in 91. They went to Chicago, 1 o'clock game. You know, Ditka's Bears, they're 4-1. You know, Washington goes in there and they dominated the Bears. They won the game 20-7. They turned. Now, you already knew defensively that the team was. That's the difference between 91 and any sort of. Again, I know this is a little bit premature. Just, you know, give me some leeway here. I'm not saying that we're in the midst of watching the 91 team. I'm not. I might say that on Monday. But I'm trying to give you kind of an apples to apples that in that season, before it became obvious that they were the best team in the league, it was a couple of wins, a couple of impressive performances, but it was the Bears game on the road. And then it would be the Giant game that followed 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later was after a bye week because the Giants were the defending champions. But that Chicago game in week six, that was a measuring stick game, and they dominated the Bears. They led in that game, you know, I think it was 20-0. They won 20-7. Chicago couldn't do anything offensively against Washington's defense, and Washington walked out of Soldier Field with a 6-0 record. I think they went on and beat the Browns the next week, and then the game of the year actually was Washington-New York on Sunday Night Football when the Giants as the defending champions with Ray Handley as the head coach after he had replaced Parcells that year. That was the Ray Handley year in New York. The Giants were, you know, struggling, but they had a winning record, and they were 4-3. By the way, I'll never forget, this was a game in which it was like one of those games in which it felt like you know, if Washington won the game, they were going to win the Super Bowl. But you kind of felt like the Giants with that championship swagger were going to come back. They were going to come in and win that game. The Giants led that game 13-0 at halftime, and then Washington erupted in the second half, ripping to Gary Clark on a 50-yarder, which gave them the lead, and they won 17-13, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. The Bears game in 91, week six, measuring stick game. The Ravens game in 2024 at 4-1, a bit of a measuring stick game. I think it is. I have no problem with the way Dan Quinn answered the question. I actually liked the way he answered the question.
I asked you this a couple of weeks ago, but he keeps doing it. When Jaden makes a play on the move and throws the ball 60 yards downfield, or drops it in a bucket to Diami, what is the impact on that, on the defense?
Yes. Yeah, it can be demoralizing, you know, because all of a sudden you're created some long yardage scenarios, you know, just what I was referring to in the third downs. And so to have a big shot to, you know, even when the person's guarded well, to put it in the only spot it could go, the play that comes to mind before today was the one to Terry at the end of the Cincinnati game, where there was only really one spot that you could throw that pass. And he had a couple of those scenarios today. And I thought, quite honestly, it was a grimy start for the offense. It didn't go good. And I had told him inside, sometimes you learn as much from that start as you do from the 27 for 29, because different ways. But at the end, what I can tell you is, like, he processes quickly. All right, this is how they're going to go, then this is how we're going to go play. And so you learn from those as well. And I'd much prefer lessons and learning after winning, I can tell you that. But all of its information, and he's such a remarkable competitor that he does learn.
That was a question that David Aldridge from The Athletic asked Dan Quinn after the game on Sunday, and I think we played it yesterday, but I wanted to play it again because I just loved the first part of that answer when he said, yeah, it can be demoralizing. You know, talking about that, you know, getting away from the pressure and the 66-yard bomb that he threw to Terry. Dan Quinn was a defensive coordinator. He's been a defensive head coach. This was what he was looking for in a quarterback that could demoralize a defense, a quarterback who you think you've got him dead to right because it's third and 13 and you got the right pressure dialed up and you're going to get to him and you're going to force a punt. And then all of a sudden, he breaks your heart. And he gets outside the pocket and he throws a 66-yard bomb and you're lining up to play first and goal defense 10 seconds later. What was the word? I think I remember the word that Quinn used to describe Jaden Daniels when he was on with the Junkies. This was in the spring before the draft, Denton, and they were playing one-word association. You know, they named the quarterback, and it was a quarterback that was going to be drafted, and then what was the first word that came to his mind? And when they said Jaden Daniels, do you remember what the word was?
I believe it was playmaker.
Was it playmaker? I thought it was explosive.
It was one of the two.
Whatever. Playmaker, it suffices. It was something that essentially said, that's the kind of guy, I want the guy that demoralizes me as a defensive coordinator, that has that ability to all of the sudden, in a long yardage scenario, break my spirit. And that's what he did on that play. That's what he did on that fourth down and three when they went for it. And Owusu-Koramoah came in off the edge and didn't play contain. I don't even know if it would have mattered if he had played contain. And Jaden just kind of laughed and took it down the sideline for 34 yards. It's the kind of play that Mahomes has been making for several years now. Josh Allen makes. Lamar Jackson makes. You know, these are the plays that separate the really good quarterbacks from the elite level quarterbacks in the league. The guys that have an act two to on a play, you know, a part two to a play. Like, oh, it didn't go the way we wanted it to, but I'm going to get outside the pocket or I'm going to move around and I'm going to create a second play. This is the way Quinn described it earlier in the season. And I think it's a good way to describe it. It's like there's the play and then there's the follow-up within the same play. And the elite guys have that second play within that one play. And that's the one that usually demoralizes a defense. And he's got it. I mean, he has that elite trait. The difference-making trait between really good and elite. Now, to get to really good, you've got to do other things really well. It can't be all about the second part. The other first part's got to be something that you excel in as well. So far, he's passed that with flying colors. He can read defenses. He can process. He can throw with anticipation. He can throw short. He can throw medium. He can throw long. He can throw to the sidelines. He can throw over the middle of the field. He can throw when he's got time, and he can throw and he can process quickly and get it out when he's under pressure. But it's that demoralizing play that Quinn was talking about that he was looking to find in a quarterback because he knows as a defensive guy what it feels like to have them, you know, first and 10, now it's second and 11, now it's third and 13. You got them going backwards. It's down and distance advantage defense. And then all of a sudden, 10 seconds later, you're lining up playing first and goal defense because of what he just did. It's, and he's done this how many times? I mean, look, I think I said this last week after the Arizona game. This is not a coordinator or a quarterback that says, oh, it's third and long, let's run a draw. Let's run a quick screen. Let's run a bubble. Let's try to get some of the yards back and punt it. Or, you know, look, if they're in field goal range, you don't want to get knocked out of field goal range or you want to improve your field goal range, that's one thing. You might run a bubble. You might run a draw. But this team last week on third and 13, they dropped him back a couple of times, completed to Noah Brown first down. On Sunday, third and 13, they're throwing a bomb off schedule. He's not looking on a bubble. They didn't run a draw. Now, they did run a screen to Eckler when they were up 31 to 6. And that was smart because they had just dropped him back two plays earlier and he had gotten sacked. So you do want to see better judgment with big leads as it relates to your quarterback's health. They did drop him back at 31-6 in the fourth quarter or with like 4 minutes to go in the third quarter. And he got, you know, mangled around a little bit on a sack. And then the next third down throw, which was third and long, they threw a screen. But that was game situation. Protect the quarterback in that moment. And then eventually take him out of the game. All right. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. The breaking NFL news, Robert Saleh let go as the Jets head coach today. Fired. We'll let you know. Denton will have it in his news and updates as to whom they name interim coach. All right, phone lines are open. They are packed. What do you make of this team after five games, and what kind of shot do you give them Sunday? I think through five games, this is a good, very good team with an elite-level quarterback, and I give them a really good shot of going into Baltimore and winning on Sunday. All right, keys to a win over the Baltimore Ravens. I think this game really is decided in one area of the field more than any other, and that would be the red zone. The better red zone team wins on Sunday. Of course, there are scenarios in which you end up, you know, giving up possessions before you get to the red zone with turnovers, with penalties, but both teams, all right, are going to be able to move the football more likely than not. Both teams have been excellent in the red zone their last three games. The Ravens number one in the NFL, Washington sixth in the NFL over their last three games. This game comes down to two teams who move the ball up and down the field between the 20s, but when they get to the red zone, who forces the most field goal attempts wins? Who gets a fourth down stop more than the other team wins the game? I don't see a lot of punts in this game. I see a lot of yards, maybe a clock that runs, maybe, you know, balls that don't hit the ground, maybe a faster game, maybe a lower possession count game. You know, Washington had a seven possession game against the Giants because they didn't punt, a six possession game against the Bengals because they didn't punt, and a nine-possession game against the Cardinals. That is less than the average number of possessions, far less than you typically get on, you know, when you have the ball. You get about 10.5 to 11 possessions a game on average in the NFL. Washington's been playing fewer possessions because they don't give up the ball very much. So I see that kind of a game. I see a seven or an eight possession game for each team. And the team that attempts more field goals probably loses. Who scores touchdowns versus who kicks field goals is probably the difference in this game. Now, a couple of things that you would like to see Washington do, you know, in between the 20s, if you assume that you're going to get moved on, you got to somehow slow down the run. I'm not sure Washington can do much to slow down Baltimore. I really don't. I'm not confident that they have figured it out defensively. I know some of you are. I think last week is a major head fake. Cleveland, horrible on offense. Just terrible at the quarterback position. The week before, go figure, Arizona decides they're not going to run their quarterback at all against Washington. They did it against San Francisco. Did Washington have a lot to do with that? Containing him in the pocket? Sure, there was some of that, but they didn't run him on any called runs or designed runs or option runs in the game, Kyler Murray. So I can't take a lot of the last two games and turn it into, I'm super confident now they figured it out defensively. They're still not turning the ball over. They don't get takeaways. And they're playing the best offensive team they have played all year long. Cincinnati was good. Cincinnati didn't punt. All right, Cincinnati versus Washington came down to a couple of field goal attempts and a missed field goal by Cincinnati. That was the difference in the game. I see something similar to that on Sunday. But with the Ravens, if you don't slow down the run, which I think will be very hard to do, but if you don't perhaps sell out to slow down the run, then you are vulnerable to 12, 13, 14 play drives at 5-plus yards per carry with 5-6 minutes eaten off the clock. That's 5 to 6 minutes your own offense isn't on the field. I'm not advocating selling out to stop the run and taking, you know, your lumps on big plays and let them score on 60-yard touchdowns. It just would be painful and Baltimore does this to teams, it would be painful to see Henry for six, Jackson on a keeper on a read option for five more, Justice Hill on a quick swing pass for six more, you know, and just see methodically from the 30-yard line, 70-yard, 12, 13, 14 play drives eating up 5-6 minutes of time. I'm concerned about what Washington will do defensively to slow down the run. Baltimore's in 12 personnel, 13 personnel with a 300-pound fullback in Patrick Ricard a lot of the time. Washington's been in nickel primarily. Now, most teams don't play base defense the majority of the time, but Washington's been in nickel and in dime a lot of the time. Can you stop the run with five defensive backs on the field? Maybe. Maybe their best tacklers are actually some of their safeties. It's going to be interesting to see what Washington chooses to do in an effort to slow down the run. Who knows? Maybe they choose to do less than I am thinking, and they'll just try to gut it out and tough it out once Baltimore gets to the red zone. That may be Baltimore's attack defensively as well. We'll bend and we won't break when you get to a condensed field when the field shortens when you get to the red zone. It's going to be interesting, though, to see how Washington matches up personnel. Will we see more base defense, more three linebackers on the field? I doubt it. I think Joe Witt Jr. and Dan Quinn want their best players on the field, and I don't think that includes typically three linebackers. But, man, Baltimore can just run it down your throat. This idea that they figured it all out against a Cleveland team that was just lacking in imagination and lacking in talent and lacking in health on offense, I think would be massively misdirected if taken that way. But slowing it down a little, you know, perhaps, you know, not getting gashed for 5-6 yards, 7 yards per carry, I think that that would be important to the psyche, if anything else. Baltimore doesn't need to run it to move it. We saw some of that last week. Lamar Jackson, exceptional, exceptional from the pocket last week versus blitz pressure and versus normal four-man rushes. I thought he looked about as good as he's looked as a passer last week. By the way, a playmaker as well. Number three. Washington beats Baltimore if, you know, this is one of those games when you are an underdog for a reason. You know, Baltimore probably is the more complete team right now, although I think the offenses are very comparable. I don't think Baltimore defensively is what they were last year by a long shot, especially in their secondary. But in these games, when you go in as that team, you need a couple of things to go your way. You know, I talked about this earlier in the week when we first started to think about this game, and I was thinking about it in terms of, you know, who forces field goals? Who forces the surprise punt in the game? Well, sometimes the field goal attempt or the surprise punt in a game between two explosive offensive teams is a penalty that derails it. Although these two teams don't seem to be derailed by penalties much. They are totally capable of overcoming 2nd and 20, 3rd and 15. They have. But if you can get a penalty, even if it doesn't really look like a penalty, a lot of penalties don't look like penalties. You got to be on the right side of those. That holding call where they go to the replay and Nance and Romo say, I didn't see anything there. I think that was a good block. Yeah, but now it's 1st and 20 instead of 2nd and 2. You know, they need some of those. Obviously, winning the turnover battle to shorten a drive or to take away a possession would be huge in this game. When you go back, you know, over these four games, you know, take the Arizona game and the Cleveland games kind of out because those were one-sided blowouts. But the Giant game really was won because of a punch-out by Benjamin St. Juice on Devin Singletary on the first drive of the third quarter. They stole a possession. You know, and it was crucial in a game in which they won with a walk-off field goal. In Cincinnati, they got a really big play by Sanristil and Chin, and they forced a 48-yard field goal that Cincinnati Evan McPherson missed. That was massive in the game. These are the kinds of things that you probably need one or two of. You need something to just slow down, derail a drive, force an unexpected punt, or force that unexpected field goal when they're rolling. Because there are going to be drives where Baltimore starts out at their own 30-yard line after we kick off, hopefully, after we kick off. And they start at their 25 or their 30 or their 33-yard line, and they're just motoring it down the field. And then you need something. And we see it in the NFL every week, even with really good offensive teams. It's like, what? That wasn't offensive pass interference. That wasn't holding. And all of a sudden, they're trying to overcome a first and long or second and long situation. If you get them into those situations, you've got to find a way to get off the field. I don't think this game is that difficult in terms of viewing it. It, of course, will end up being something totally different than what we're talking about, because the NFL kind of takes on, you know, the a different look every week from team to team, game to game. So it'll probably be, you know, a low scoring 17-14 defensive battle, but that's not what it looks like going in. What it looks like going in is two teams that haven't been stopped offensively for several weeks in a row, that have vulnerabilities defensively, and this is like the team with the ball at the end wins. The team that ends up kicking more field goals loses. The team that has a possession stolen from them by a bad penalty call and ends up having to punt is, you know, all of a sudden potentially in a two-score deficit. Or rather than going up two scores, it remains a one-score, you know, game. It's those things to me that kind of define this game going in. It's not a lot harder than that. Now, how do you get those red zone stops? It's going to be interesting defensively to see how Washington plays it. When they are in that condensed field situation, are they in nickel? Do they, you know, do they basically spread it out in coverage? Do they load the box and dare, you know, Jackson to beat them with a slant to one of their tight ends, a fade to Zay Flowers, you know, in hopes that he doesn't connect on a couple of those throws in a tightly condensed situation? Offensively, how creative does Cliff Kingsbury have to be when they get into that red zone? They've got, you know, a cheat code, but the other team has one as well. Because it's the second play, you know, the extension off the first play in the red zone that often is the difference between touchdowns and field goals. This matchup is big time, but it really doesn't seem super nuanced or super complicated going in. Both of these offenses are rolling. Both of these defenses have struggled here recently. I still am not confident in Washington's defense, despite what many think after the Cleveland game in particular. And it's about, you know, stealing a possession here or there, forcing a field goal attempt versus giving up a touchdown, getting a phantom holding or a phantom offensive PI penalty to derail a drive. I think that's what it comes down to. I think it's going to be one of those games that's fast moving. I think Washington, even though they probably won't run the ball effectively against Baltimore, will be able to throw the football, will be able to throw short, quick game against Baltimore, run extension throws, which we've seen at times. Really looking forward to seeing the matchup. I don't think it's high-level chess in this game. I think it's a couple of breaks and a couple of big plays on defense by either team without much being expected that ends up being the difference. Of course, you can't give the ball away. Those are possessions where more likely than not, they're going to result in scores for the other team that would put the game out of balance in terms of you want to stay matching. You know, they score, you got to score. Or you score, they come back, then you got to get another one. You got to stay ahead of them. Be aggressive. Oh, I wrote down this last thing. You've got to be aggressive in the final 2 minutes of the first half if you have the football. There is no, you know, laying off, giving your team an extra possession in the game. You have to steal as many opportunities possession-wise as you can in this game. You do not want to be one short than you should have been. You do not want to end up in the locker room at halftime with timeouts that you should have taken on defense, and by the time you got the ball back, you decided to knee it out in the first half and take two timeouts with you. No, this has to be a stay aggressive in terms of giving your offense as many chances as possible. Because I think if they do, I think they'll score 27-plus. Joining us right now is one of my favorite guests, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. It's our friend Barry Svrluga from the Washington Post, at Barry, Svrluga on X on Twitter. Barry wrote on Sunday after the 34-13 win over Cleveland, and I thought this was, it made me smile and giggle a little bit. When Dan Quinn was answering that question from David Aldridge about how demoralizing it is to, on 3rd and 13, to watch the quarterback, if you're Cleveland, you know, scramble around, create more time, and throw a 66-yard bomb. And part of that answer, he talked about, you know, the offense, quite honestly, it was grimy to start. And Barry wrote, Coach, we know what grimy offense looks like. What happened Sunday? The Commanders scrubbed the grime off. Yeah, we really do know what grimy looks like. And 34 points in three quarters is not grimy. But maybe it was a little tough to start. Barry's with us right now. So I'll just start with the obvious. What's your reaction to where we are right now after 5 weeks?
I feel like I haven't stopped shaking my head since halftime on Sunday, because it was a grimy start by what are completely new standards and improved standards. And then you blink and they put that aside and they're up 24-3 and have 283 yards of offense at the half, even though for more than a quarter they didn't play well. And the things that happened, Kevin, within that are what makes you think, holy cow, not only has this turned much more quickly than I think any of us thought it would, but it turned in a way that kind of puts everything on the table. All the possibilities are there because they can overcome slow starts offensively in a way that they haven't been able to for years. They used to have to be like, well, okay, they get the ball back and they've got to go 12 plays to cover 70 yards and eat up 8 minutes of clock, and everything has to be perfect, and they have to convert 4 third downs along the way, to now where the quarterback can go to the coordinator on the side and say, hey, that was open, let's take a shot, and 41 yards later you find Deami Brown in the end zone, you're up 24-3 at half. I'm staggered by how thoroughly and how quickly both reality and ensuing expectations have turned in 5 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'll ask you. So rank in order, who's the most responsible for us feeling this incredible change after just a month plus of the season? Who's most responsible for it? Rank them.
I go Daniels 1, Adam Peters 2, Dan Quinn 3, but Cliff Kingsbury is right behind him because he's been much better than I would have guessed and has been creative. And the reason I ranked them that way is because how many times, Kevin, in the last 10, 15, pick a number of years, have we had a conversation about they can't find the person to fix the most important position in American sports, quarterback? We've talked about Carson Wentz and Case Keenum and Dwayne Haskins and go down the list, like John Beck. Like that is, it seems like, solved as long as this guy is healthy. And then I go Peters second because I think after 5 weeks, his off season is a lot better than I thought it was when it was folding out, because I didn't think they did enough to address the offensive line. I didn't think I thought they had massive problems at cornerback, and maybe they still do, and maybe those will get exposed over the course of the season. But you look at how Frankie Louvu is playing right now. You look at how Dorrance Armstrong has had an impact in the last couple of weeks. Bobby Wagner is steady. They did a lot to address the room and make it a better room, but I also think the pieces are fitting better, and I think the draft, if you look at Coleman as a potential solution at left tackle, like, I think he did a ton right. And then Quinn, I'll give credit for a lot of the stuff that seems like jargony, team-building stuff, like, really seems to be resonating with these guys, and they're a together group in a way that previous felt that way. It's the Ashburn Park parking lot, getting ready to go in for a practice. I sometimes dread coming out here because you're like looking for a story. And now I'm like, I can't wait to talk to these guys.
Yeah, I mean, you said so much there, starting with, oh my God, how many times over the years did we say there's only one way to overcome all of the dysfunctional mess, and that is to luck their way into a quarterback, and even if they do that, Snyder will mess it up anyway somehow. And now they have that quarterback, and you said, you know, here we are just incredibly 5 weeks into the season, and we have a limited number of possibilities, not a limited, an unlimited number of possibilities. So I'll ask you, what are the possibilities?
I think there's no ceiling on it. And that is different than saying, I think they're going to win the Super Bowl. But I heard in your last segment, you know, that your choices of if they blow the Ravens out, it is completely legitimate conversation on Monday to say they are contenders. They would be 5-1. Only the Vikings are undefeated at this point. I find it really interesting. The last two games against Arizona and Cleveland, one thing that this team has done already that I feel like Washington teams have not done for a decade or more is take an opponent that they are better at and just beat them. Just beat them from start to finish and have the quarterback sit out the fourth quarter and have the fans go home happy. It's just such a strange feeling around here. I think if you want to get really realistic, like, how are you handicapping the division right now? Washington is the favorite in the division right now. Doesn't mean they're going to win it. Doesn't mean they're going to go 4-0 against the Eagles and the Cowboys. But it just, I've tried to take in as much former football player and coach analysis this week to make sure that I'm checking myself, that what the optimism that I'm feeling that is almost unprecedented in my more than 20 years here, is that legit? And I'm hearing over and over and over again from Jay Gruden on Grant and Danny or Dan Orlovsky or whatever that, you know, what you're seeing is real. Does not guarantee anything, particularly health of the quarterback. Right. But there's for the first time in forever, there's no reason to restrain your optimism because this is what people around here have been waiting for so long.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, going back to your rankings, it's because of Jaden Daniels. Like, there's always a chance that an NFL team, you know, can win 4 out of 5 to start the season, and you can be super optimistic, but it not come with a superstar at the most important position in sports. But this one has included that, which is why I think people like you and me are open to anything. And if they were to beat Baltimore, whether we say it or not, it's going to be the conversation. They're actually not currently the favorite to win the division. They're a slight, you know, underdog to Philly. Philly's still a slight favorite pretty much across the board. But if they win Sunday, they go from not only a division favorite, but one of the top three favorites to get to the Super Bowl out of the NFC. And I think Jaden Daniels, if he plays well, which I think he has to, becomes perhaps the front runner for the MVP. That's insane.
It's insane. And I think, you know, if you want to tap the brakes on it a little bit, and it's very possible they lose this game, right? This is an excellent team, despite the weird Vegas result against Vegas at home. But I think what's possible over the rest of the season, if the things don't, like, take off like a skyrocket, is yes, the holes on the roster do show up. They're not good enough at corner. They're not good enough at edge rusher. They're not good enough at playmaking receiver. But even if that plays out, and think about this, Kevin, like already, if they go 6-6 the rest of the way, they have 10 wins. That 10 win seasons don't happen around here very often. One under Gibbs, the RG3 rookie year, I think three this century, right? They haven't won 11 games in a year since the 91 Super Bowl run. So there's a lot of paths to what we would have considered on September 1 a major step forward. Even if those holes on the roster are exposed over the next 2 or 3 months, it's not that big of a deal because they've plugged the hole that they have had for a quarter century, and that's quarterback. So it's almost like as long as he stays healthy, and that's the big if, because if we're going to have visions of RG3 if he breaks. But as long as he stays healthy, there's almost no way to come out of this season without tremendous optimism going forward, because you know you have the quarterback who, even if he's less consistent over the last 12 weeks than he has been over the first five, you know what the ability is there. You know what the work ethic is there. You know what the intelligence is there. And then you can let what looks like a very good personnel man in Adam Peters address the holes that remained on the roster, and it's really hard to think that you wouldn't go into 2025 feeling great about the team, which is all of this. Every single word I say, I'm almost stunned I'm saying it.
Yeah, and I think that it was that's such a good way to put it. It's like, even if, and I do think they might be a little bit limited defensively, regardless of the last 2 weeks. We'll see. This is a massive test Sunday. And, you know, if that ends up costing them a legitimate deep run into the postseason, I don't think it'll cost them a playoff berth or a division title. It'll matter in the moment, but you still have solved the hardest thing to solve in the game, which is that position. So we're talking to Barry Zwerluga, of course, from the Washington Post. What does this mean right now? Like, where are we going with respect to the reaction, the city? You know what it's like because you're from here. I know what it's like because I live through it because I'm from here. You know, we haven't had that. We had that during the 2012 season. But remember, they were 3-6. So it came late as they got on a run. If they win Sunday, it's the first 5-1 start since 96. You know, they've never had a big early season game like this. But you have a good feel for it. You know, a lot of us do that are in touch with a lot of the people that care about sports, care about the team. Where's this headed right now?
It's almost like the town is getting its team back in a way, and it just hasn't been joyous. It's been a slog for so long. A lot of that had to do with the owner. A lot of that had to do with not being able to figure out quarterback. A lot of it had to do with the building and where they play and what that experience was. But if you solve the quarterback, which it looks like they did, and the owner has sold the team, which he did, it's almost like a Christmas present, right? And I think it matters, Kevin, that what you said about, you know, 4-1 or 5-1, and I've written this a thousand different ways that I worry about plagiarizing myself. Like, they are always chasing the season, and you can't. Was there excitement, real excitement, around Robert Griffin III after the opener in New Orleans when he's lying on his back watching Pierre Garçon score on that long touchdown pass? There absolutely was. They were 3-6 going into the bye, and they needed to run off their last seven to get to the division title, and that was exciting. But it's not the same as everything is possible from the middle of October on. And that's true whether they win this weekend or lose this weekend. They could be 4. Think about how you would have felt if on September 1st somebody said, you know, the Commanders are going to be 4-2 after 6 weeks. You would have taken that 100 times out of 100, because for once they're building a season, you know, going like from ahead. The last time they really were ahead in the season like this was 2008 and Jim Zorn. And I think they had outscored their opponents through 4-1 a 4-1 start by a total of 22 points or something.
Yeah, all those games were close, right?
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like this kind of taking care of business.
And Jason Campbell was the quarterback.
Yes, right, exactly. It was a nice start. That's all it was. They got to 6-2, finished 2-6, and missed the playoffs at 8-8. This one really genuinely feels like they're playing from ahead because, you know, the margin of victory is the best in the sport, I believe. Their scoring offense is the highest, which is, like, again, the fact that they don't have to just squeeze everything out of all their possessions just to get to 21 points, like, that's a monumental shift in the style and the feel of what this team is.
Well, of, you know, all of the results through 5 weeks, qualitative and quantitative, one that is actually amazing, you just reminded me of it, is they are the highest scoring team in the league. And, you know, it's not like they've had a bunch of turnovers that have scored or set up short fields or the special teams got too. This is all the offense, you know, at 31 points per game. So we've mentioned the 2012 season. I think the answers to this are kind of easy, but what you say, we were, even though they started 3-6, the start to that season, you mentioned the New Orleans game, you know, the Minnesota game when he ran for 76 yards and 100 or whatever on one play. And I think at that point they were 3-3 or something like that. There's a lot of similarities in terms of the way the town felt, the fan base felt in that moment. What's different to you other than the record?
That's a good question. Because I think you're right, and I think at that point, you know, the coach was Mike Shanahan, who was trying to get into the Hall of Fame, so you felt at that point that you had the solution there. I mean, I think the owner being different is a major, major thing, because we don't know everything we need to know about Josh Harris as an owner, and I think just saying everything is solved at that position because somebody other than Dan owns the team is a little bit too simplistic, but I also am pretty comfortable saying I don't think the owner is trying to befriend the quarterback, even though the quarterback is such a star at this point. I think the quarterback acts like, you know, to borrow a Ryan Zimmerman phrase, like employee number five. He does his work. He's professional. And I don't think the owner is in any way kind of meddling with any of that. So if there's a difference internally from 2012, that would be the biggest thing, I think. Externally, if there's any sort of hesitance in the fan base, and I'm not sensing it when I listen to you guys, like people call in, like it doesn't seem like people are holding back. But I do think if he gets hurt, and even if it's a minor injury, and even if it only costs him a quarter or a game or two games or something, there will be that kind of ghost of RG3 thing, because that turned so swiftly after the Seattle playoff game and the whole, you know, all in for week one and the drama that played out from there. It just would be I'm not saying the situations would play out the same in any way. It just would be hard to distance yourself from how that played out, you know, a dozen years ago.
Yeah. I mean, in having this conversation, you nailed the first one. We got a different owner. The owner's not going to want to befriend a 23-year-old, you know, kid because he's a star. We know that that was Dan's favorite thing to do. And then meddle between relationships, you know, with coaches and players. And two, I just think Daniels is a completely different player. You know, Barry, he is so much more advanced as a passer than RG3 was coming into the league or ever was in the league. And then personality-wise, there's probably a big difference between the two as well.
Yeah, and I think I talked to somebody who had worked with the LSU program last year and had a real feel for Daniels. And this is before I even appreciated what was showing up here. But he's not the greatest interview. He's like, I'm not waiting
correct
on his every word at the podium today. But who cares about that? He is professional. He is prepared. He is diligent. He is a star, undeniably a star, who does not separate himself from the room because he's a star. In fact, he's inclusive. He's got a great personality. You can tell, and I don't want to throw shade or make determinations about Caleb Williams at the moment. He just played a really good game on Sunday, and he could be a great quarterback. But you can tell how much fun these guys think it is to play with Jaden Daniels. And every, you probably talked about the mic'd up Sam Cosmi thing from a couple weeks ago where he just said, like, you know, on the side, like, dude, how much fun is it to play with five? Like, you know, like that's really telling, because players know players, and you cannot pull one over on them if you're not being real. And this guy seems to be being real.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the way we felt 12 years ago in early October is identical to the way we feel right now, but I don't think it's the same thing at all. We'll see. All right. So how do they do Sunday in Baltimore?
You know, the thing that's, I think it'd be surprising to me if they stopped the Baltimore offense on the ground in particular, because, you know, it's Lamar and Derrick Henry, and there's no shame in not being able to stop them. They're gaining 212 yards, I think, a game on the ground. But another thing that has changed is, like, this team can now win a shootout. Like, if the game is going to be 38-35, flip a coin to who wins it, right? Like, it's just, that's another visceral change. Is, like, in past years, if the Washington team had gone up to Baltimore, like, and we'd be talking about the game beforehand, like, well, if they can keep it to 21-17, maybe they have a chance, and they do create a turnover and they get a short field and all that stuff. None of that stuff matters, because every time this kid gets the ball, he's a threat to score. He's a threat to score on 3rd and 13 from his minus side of the field, because he's such a playmaker. So I don't expect Washington to be able to slow down Baltimore's offense. It's just too strong, physical. It probably doesn't play to Washington's strength. But I don't think that Baltimore is going to hold Washington to 17 points either. And that's, you know, that's just another in a series of stunning things to say, that, like, you kind of chalk up that this team is going to put together scoring drives. And, you know, after week two against the Giants, I was wondering, like, how are they ever going to punch it through and get into the end zone, because maybe they don't have weapons when they get down close. But that puts aside the fact that they put together 7 scoring drives in that game. Like, they sometimes have had years where it takes 3 games to put together 7 scoring drives. So I am looking forward to this game in a way that I haven't for a regular season game in a long time, not just because of what's at stake, but because of the style in which it can potentially play out, which is a much more interesting, exciting style than Washington has put on the field in a long, long time.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, the anticipation for that Cincinnati game for me was, like, the highest it's been. Then I couldn't wait to see him. And I say him because it's really about him in so many ways. Watch him against Arizona, then the same on Sunday. But this one is, it's, you know, I've been saying it all week, Barry, this is the highest profile early season game this franchise has had in decades, probably going back to, you know, when they were the defending champs in 92. That's how long it's been, because every other run when they've, you know, been in contention or they've actually made the playoffs few and far between were late season runs. Nothing happened this early. So, yeah.
The only game that could be possible is the last game of the 2012 season when they played Dallas.
Right, at the end of the year.
At the end of the year, and it was flex.
Yes.
And I would just close, Kevin, by saying this. Like, NBC apparently wanted to flex this game into Sunday Night Football. And CBS used its card to say, no, we're protecting the game for 1 o'clock. The networks have flipped from putting every Washington game at 1.
I looked at the schedule. There actually aren't that many opportunities between now and the Dallas game Thanksgiving week for them to get flexed. But that's another story altogether. I don't want to keep you too long, but I do want to ask you this. Am I overreacting? And I'm sure this has been a reaction that I've had previously. I love this time of year in baseball. Love it. I think that we got to go to best of 7 in this division series round and best of 5 in the first wild card weekend round. What do you think?
it would have to come at the cost of cutting back the regular season to 154 or 152 or something like that, because they can't, or, and Scott Boras has put forth this idea, or going to a neutral site for the World Series, because you can't play World Series games in Cleveland or Detroit on November 15th.
So you're saying cut back the regular season because of the possibility of bad weather if it extends later into, November.
Correct. Okay. And I think the players, and I don't necessarily agree with you that it has to go. My answer for the Dodgers not winning a best of five series, or the Phillies maybe, 95 win Phillies team not advancing in a best of five, is like, play better. Just win those games. Construct your team in a way that you have a better chance. I don't mind the flukiness of it. I would like this postseason to end with a marquee matchup of Phillies, Yankees, a Dodgers, Yankees, Otani, Soto, all right, that kind of stuff. And I'll be disappointed a little bit if it's, Cleveland or, Kansas City, San Diego. But my answer to the whittling out of the 100-win teams, and there aren't 100-win teams this year, but the best team, is just those guys got to play better when it counts. So I don't get as worked up about it. And these games have just been – they've been awesome.
They've been awesome so far. I mean, I actually really would love to see Bryce Harper and the Phillies get this to a Game 5, just to see him in more of those clutch moments, which I think is compelling sports watches. All right. Thanks. Hope you're well.
Appreciate it, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Barry Zwerluga, everybody. It's different around these parts these days. So we have the next three shows as lead up to what absolutely is the biggest early season game this franchise has had in decades. We've talked about it all week long. They've had, important games, but almost all of them have been later in the season, because every decent team, and I say decent because none of the teams they ever had was legitimately good. I mean, I was pretty excited about the 2012 team at the end of the year. It was hard not to be. And I do think that that was the last team that actually had a chance, had Griffin stayed upright, to maybe win against Seattle and perhaps win the following week against Atlanta. This is, in terms of early season, the most important, the biggest marquee game they've been involved in maybe since sometime during the 90s. And there are three likely reactions we're going to have after the game is over, based on the result of the game. I guess there are more possibilities, but the three likely reactions at 4:15 on Sunday afternoon is they win the game, and now we believe they are legitimate Super Bowl contenders. I don't think that's an exaggeration. I think if they go up to Baltimore and win the game, no matter how they win it, at 5-1, they would be viewed by people outside this market as a Super Bowl contender out of the NFC. So I would hope that that would be the reaction. And by the way, I think it would be a justified reaction at that point. That's the reaction if they win. If, number two, if they lose, but they lose in a close, hard-fought game where you continue to see offensively a lot of promise, a lot of scoring, a lot of yards, and a lot of Jaden Daniels doing what he's done all season long, then the reaction is, well, the momentum continues. The early season optimism is justified. And while the reaction perhaps doesn't rise to the level of, we got a shot to make the Super Bowl, at that point, it's like, look, they're good. This was the first legit test since the opener. They didn't win it. They're good. The division is in play, and they can win a playoff game or two. And then the third likely, reaction based on the potential results of the game is that they get blown out Sunday in Baltimore. And at that point, because we are so reactionary to the most recent impressions we have, I think the reaction will be, all right, it's time to kind of come back down to earth. This is still a rebuild kind of a situation. They're better than we thought they'd be, but, you know, they'll have other tough games and it'll be tough for them. You know, they might be able to get to 9-8 or 10-7 and get to the playoffs, but this is not, you know, a legitimate upper tier team where they are right now in the power rankings. So again, three results, three reactions to those results that are likely. You know, you may come up with another result. The only other result, really, from a score standpoint would be not only do they win in blowout fashion. But for me, all they got to do is win, and they're going to be talked about as a legitimate NFC Super Bowl contender. So they win, Super Bowl contenders. They lose in a close, hard-fought game. Hey, momentum still there. Our early season optimism justified. We can win the division. We can win a playoff game or two. They get blown out in Baltimore. All right, let's dial it back. Still a good start to the season, but this is still, as we thought a few weeks ago, kind of a rebuild, building block season. Going to be better than we thought it was because they've already got four wins, but this isn't a team that's a threat to do anything even if they get to the postseason. Am I missing any kind of, you know, result slash reaction Sunday at 4:15? I don't think I am. You think I am, Denton?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there will always be like some like way overreactors, but rational reactions, I don't think you're missing anything.
All right, so if those are the three options, which one are we going to be talking to each other about? At, you know, Sunday afternoon, 4:15. Is it going to be they win? And, oh, by the way, here we go. It's now Super Bowl in the conversation. They lose a close game. Hey, they're a good team. Early season optimism justified. Maybe, you know, maybe not a win a couple of playoffs team, but we still got a chance to get into the playoffs and the division we're in. Or they get blown out and then it's all dialed back because it's week to week. It's reactionary. It's overreactionary at times. Which of those three will it be? 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. So, which are you predicting?
I'm predicting the first one. I think the team's going to win. I think we're going to sit here on Monday, and we are going to have an influx of calls of people claiming it's Super Bowl or bust. We're going to the postseason. We're winning the NFC Championship. We're getting a home playoff game. Everything under the sun. I think it's going to be a whole lot of excitement come Monday morning. I'm expecting a win. And then the first that you mentioned, which is that all of the excitement that we've had this week is only going to rise.
I agree with you. I can't believe I'm saying this. I think they're going to win the game Sunday. I think they're unblanking stoppable on offense. I think the better quarterback on Sunday is going to be the road quarterback. Not by much. Not by much. I think Baltimore defensively is gettable. And in many ways, they actually may not be as good as the team they just faced defensively. Cleveland. Now, Cleveland was atrocious offensively, as we've discussed the first 2 days of the week. Probably the worst offensive team I've seen in the NFL in many, many years. Although Washington had a couple of those terrible offensive teams in recent years. But terrible offensive team with a quarterback that is done. That thing is over. I mean, they got to get out of that thing. I don't know if they can. I think there's a legitimate chance they're going to win the game, and I would pick this first option. They go there, they win, probably something very exciting, 34-28, 35-31, 38-35, 30-27, and the quarterback plays outstanding again. And at that point, because that is the legitimate test, certainly offensively, that's the game in which we have to then say, we're six games into the season, they've won five in a row. They just went and beat a team that's won three in a row and is considered a Super Bowl favorite themselves or contender themselves. Yeah, Washington is right there in the NFC for the first time in forever with a chance to go to the Super Bowl out of the NFC. That would be my answer as well. And I really don't even want to consider the other answers. But the other answers are the other answers. I mean, those are the results in terms of the possibilities and the likely descriptions of what the reactions will be to those results. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. Three things can happen on Sunday. They can win the game, and if they do, I think it's all about, we're talking Super Bowl now. And Denton, you just went through some of the reactions. People are going to start looking at trade deadline. Okay, now we are buyers at the trade deadline. But we are a legitimate Super Bowl contender if we go to Baltimore and win. Look, there is context, right? Like if Lamar, you know, gets hurt early in the game and doesn't play and Washington wins, you know, in part because of that. Okay, that's different. But just assuming normal situation, both teams are playing their best players, that's option one. They win, we're talking Super Bowl. Option two, they lose a close game, we're still talking good season, playoffs likely. They get blown out, we're talking dialed back expectations in a major way. But still, I think the reaction would be that that's a really good team they faced. And a lot of teams on their schedule coming up aren't nearly as good. And they can still win a lot of games and they can still potentially make the playoffs.